In a world where multi-million dollar satellites are used to find Tupperware in the woods, through the magic of the internet, which is just a series of tubes, coming to you from the surface of planet Earth, the Slaga Geocaching Podcast is about to begin.
This is a Slaga Geocaching Podcast, produced by Paul Konopacki of St. Louis, Missouri. February 7, 2007. Episode number 54. Interview with Bob Pratt, a.k.a. BBD1.
Welcome to episode 54 of the Slaga Geocaching Podcast. This podcast is published under the Creative Commons No Derivative License. To contact me about these episodes, send an email to podcast@geostl.com. I try to publish two episodes a month, each around 30 minutes in length. Episodes are usually under 15 megabytes, so the time it takes to download them is minimal compared to other audio and video podcasts that exist out there. Today's interview is with Bob Pratt, a.k.a. BBD1. He started caching less than 1 year ago and has already surpassed his 400th find milestone. The audio starts with Bob showing up at my front door. We do some chit-chat about the recent geocaching potluck dinner, then head into my dining room to start the formal interview. I need to give you some background on specific parts of the discussion. For years, McDonnell Douglas was one of the largest employers in the St. Louis area. A few years back, they merged with Boeing, and the company is currently called Boeing. Although it's hard to talk about the old days without calling it McDonnell Douglas. Bob mentions two people by their first name only. Glenn is Glenn Nash, longtime Slaga member and the Missouri Geocaching.com cache approver. And Bernie, who is Bernie Verhey, an active member of Slaga who goes by the geocaching name of Happy Kraut. Bob also talks about going to the Geocaching 101 class at Greensfelder. Slaga holds a beginner's geocaching class at Greensfelder County Park a number of times each year. This is not only a good introduction to the hobby, but many of the volunteers from Slaga who help with the training will gladly offer their assistance to the students if they want to hunt the many permanent caches in the park. During the podcast, if you hear this sound, it means there's been a break in the conversation or a change in physical location.
Howdy, Tom.
Howdy.
How's it going, buddy?
Hey.
Behave yourself.
Yeah, come on in. Bob, you know Elaine or do you remember Elaine?
I think so, Bob Pratt. How do you do?
Did you go up here to the potluck?
Yeah.
At Greensfelder, that one?
Yeah, I did that. Were you there?
I didn't go.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing you.
No,
there.
Everyone thought I was going to go there because I figured I'd go to everything. But
yeah, there was more people than there were chairs.
It was great.
I mean, there were tons of food, and everybody had a good time, you know. And the only thing is we've outgrown that.
Really?
That pavilion. Standing out in the hall because there was no place to sit. A lot of us, you know, left thinking, you know, if we do this again and the club grows into more, we're not going
to
fit in here. We didn't fit in there this year. So you do all this right here. I saw your setup on the internet. I'm thinking, I'll come out that this way.
I can put it all in here.
Oh, really?
And it records to the river.
I'll be darned.
The hardest thing is really finding the right location where it's quiet.
Yeah.
Because people say, let's go meet this restaurant. I'm like, no.
Yeah, people talk.
20 conversations.
You already know what the podcasts are about.
Yeah, they're kind of fun to listen to.
The hard-hitting questions I ask.
Oh, yeah, really hard. What I want to know is this is a gal that sounds like Kelly LeBrock.
I'll never tell.
It's not your wife, though, because you didn't have that English accent.
No. It's actually, there's a program on the internet. That if you feed it text, you can pick which voices you want.
Oh, really?
English male, English female, British male, British female. I printed out your geocaching.com profile.
So I don't even know what I put in there anymore. What do I have in there?
Fishing, hunting, beer drinking, partying, chasing women, internet surfing. And all those other guys.
When I put that out there, I think, what do guys do, you know? I don't do half the stuff. I don't even hunt.
And you just passed your 400 milestone.
Yeah, I did that this past weekend, as a matter of fact. I got to tell you about my first geocache, how I got lost.
On the first geocache?
Oh, yeah. It was pathetic.
This is Paul Canapacki. I'm here in my dining room talking with Bob Pratt, also known as BBD1. But as usual, we delve into his past. Bob, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Born in Kirkwood, and then we moved out to Creve Coeur area back in December of 59, back when Creve Coeur was nothing but a farm community, and 270 wasn't even built. Go north and south, you used Ballast Road, that was it. Went to Parkway High School and decided to go down to Southwest Missouri State University.
Where's that located?
Down in Springfield, Missouri. That's right, it's Missouri State University now. I got out of there with a degree in business management and a minor in accounting. Moved down to Florida for about a month, lived with my grandmother, tried to find a job down there, but there was nothing going on. Came back up to St. Louis, got a job for the White Rogers division of Emerson Electric. I worked there for about 3 years. Then McDonnell Douglas Astronautics Company called me up and made me an offer I couldn't refuse. I was called a purchasing planner. Back in 1978, on the Harpoon anti-ship missile and the standoff land attack missile. That's the missile. It's a Harpoon derivative that has a TV camera on the front of it. You can fly it right into your living room window from over 100 miles away. It's a precision strike
missile. That's not how you tested it, was it?
No. It's basically the golden bullet that the Navy uses when they absolutely positively have to take something out and minimize collateral damage. And I also work in what they call the proprietary program area. Secret programs behind closed doors, or you have to have a special handshake and put your eye up to the wall, and so it scans it, and then you're allowed in, and then you can't talk about anything what you do in there. I used to ride off-road motorcycles, and then after breaking my leg and busting a few toes, I thought, well, I'd better switch over to street bikes. So I passed president of the McDonnell Douglas Motorcycle Club, and we did hold enduros. You know, after breaking a few legs and coming up with a few scars, it's like, I think I'll start doing something else as a hobby. I like bass fishing more than anything else. In fact, we just came back from Florida over Christmas break, did some fishing down on the St. John's River down that way.
How is bass fishing different than anything else?
You use certain lures, certain size lures, you know, certain presentations, depending on the time of year. If it's cold, you do things slower than in the summer months when they want a faster bait. I go to Canada every year, and we go fishing for northern pike and smallmouth and bass and walleye up there. And honestly, we don't fish any differently than we fish for bass in Missouri. We throw crankbaits, spinnerbaits, rubber worms, and anything else you got in your tackle box, because if you ever catch a northern pike, you'll know they'll hit a rope if you threw it out there.
Big enough line, those muskies are going to take your line.
We use spider wire line, which is a Kevlar line, and they're harder to bite through it. They can still, and a lot of people use steel leaders. I might lose a fish a day, but when you're catching 50 to 100 fish a day, who cares? I'm also the secretary for a bassing club here in town called the Bassin' Rebels of Missouri. We schedule 8 tournaments a year.
So how do you win a bass fishing contest?
Add the total weight of all your bass, and that determines who the winner is. Most of the time we catch and release, but some of the guys say, hey, I'm going to fillet theirs and take theirs home. And that's fine, because usually in October we have a fish fry. Guy's got a piece of property off the Merrimack River, and I also a handgun shoot indoors. There's a range down at the Imperial exit off 55 called Top Gun Shooting Range, and I go down there and shoot once or twice a week. I've got 6 handguns. They have 2 different types of competition. One is you shoot bowling pins. They put up a rack of 5 bowling pins. You shoot them down, and it's a timed event for the first 2 rounds. And then if you qualify as in the top 16, then they match you up, and then those last 2 have a shoot-off. And last month I took 2nd place on that. I got 3 Glocks that I use there, but I also been using my Smith & Wesson 22. Always wear with glasses while you're shooting. If you weren't wearing glasses, you should be wearing safety glasses, because empty shells will hit your glasses. I'll tell you how I got involved in geocaching, because it was an offspring of my motorcycle riding. I read these motorcycle magazines, and in Rider Magazine, January of last year, a guy was writing a story in there, and how he takes his street bike out, and he'll ride to a destination, and when he gets to that destination, he'll geocache. And sometimes he'll geocache en route to that destination. And I'm thinking, what are they talking about? What's this geocaching stuff? I ride, too. And, I mean, when I ride, sometimes I'll go out for the whole day. I'll put, you know, 200-300 miles on my bike. I start reading this. It's just a one-page article in Rider Magazine. It had the page in there, geocaching.com. And I thought, well, I'm going to look that up, see what that is. I had a Lowrance GPS, which I mount on the handlebar of my motorcycle, which has, you know, the street maps in it. And I also put it on my bass boat. And I have the lake maps on there.
So you've been using a GPS receiver for a long time.
Yeah.
You knew how to operate.
But this was a new twist on it, you know. It was like, can you do with this? What's this geocaching, you know? I wrote down, you know, the web page, and I got on there and, you know, got me an account, played around on it for a little bit, and I found out there was a geocache across a highway from me in Strawberry Creek Nature Area. And I thought, you know, one of these days I'm going to have to go try to find that thing to practice. So when if I do go out and motorcycle ride somewhere, that I'll be able to do what this guy does in the magazine article. So I punched in the coordinates and I go to get in my car. My neighbor's out there and I tell him what I'm going to go do. And he goes, well, he goes, you know, I just got a new GPS. You want to borrow it? I go, well, I got mine. I said, but give me yours. Just I'll use it as a backup. So I got a Lowrance, and he had a Garmin. I hate to offend all you Lowrance people out there, but it doesn't work very good with a Lowrance. But I got out there at Strawberry Creek, and it was a winter day, like January, end of January, beginning of February, and I started looking for this geocache, and I took the Lowrance, and I started looking for it. I mean, I walked right by it, and I walked and walked and walked, and I got to this hillside. And beautiful hillside, beautiful area. I just can't find it. It's got to be right here. That particular Lowrance that day had over a 490-foot estimated positioning error. So you can see I wasn't even in the right place. But it was a nice place. So I thought, well, let me get my neighbor's GPS out of my pocket. I fired it up, and I didn't even know how to plug the coordinates into it. But I could read the numbers, you know, the north and west.
Your current position is this.
Yeah, and I thought, well, okay, this isn't right. This isn't what the cache page says I ought to be. I walked around Strawberry Creek literally in circles, watching the numbers change and getting closer and closer to the position of where the cache was. I finally got it so the numbers pretty much lined up to the cache page. And I looked around and said, well, the only thing that's here is this old piece of metal. I lifted up, and sure enough, there it was. And it was just called geocache. That was it. And it was put there back in end of January of 01. So it's one of the oldest caches in the area. So I found that, and I thought, well, hey, great, my first cache. I opened it up. Logbook was a little damp, and it was kind of junky inside. It had been neglected for a long time. I thought, well, you know, if I ever put a geocache out here and put it over where I was lost at, you know, where my Lowrance said it was at. I said, hey, this was fun. I found one. I can find others. Took the geocaching class out there at Greensfelder. That was really good. And guys like Brawny Bear and Strider and Crowsfeet, they nursed me through the course there. I found out that the Lowrance wasn't a very good geocaching unit. So I went out and bought a Magellan. Definitely a step up from the Lowrance when it came to geocaching. Went to the picnic out there in Washington, Missouri last spring. Want to meet some of these people, you know. You see their names in logs. You see the cache that they put out on the internet. I've been to their caches, and now it's time to put faces with caches. And I thought that would be an excellent time to do that. So I fixed me up a real nice ammo can. And I took it out there to Strawberry Creek Nature Area. And while I was out there, there was a Arnold Parks Department guy. And I asked him, I said, do you mind if I put a geocache out here in the woods? I said, you know, there's already one out there. I said, doesn't seem to be hurting anything. And he goes, well, what's a geocache?
I love that.
And I explained it to him what it was. And he goes, oh, no. He goes, I don't mind y'all, putting a geocache out here. He says, as long as it does two things. He says, one, it's not visible from any of the trails. And two, it's located in an area that won't promote erosion. I said, well, I can do that. And he says, this area here is 121 acres and it's not used very much and we welcome more users to the area. And I said, okay. I said, just want to make sure that that's okay because I got no problem with it. It was where I was lost at on the attempt of my first cache. I decided to call it My Lost, Your Gain. And sure enough, it wasn't 3 weeks later it got muggled. It was 75 feet from the trail. It had been visited twice that particular Saturday. And the third time, Brawny Bear sent me an email saying, hey, your cache is destroyed. There's stuff all over the place. The logbook was there, and it had a paint pellet right in the middle of it. Some kids go down there with their paint gun, and they obviously saw one of the, say, the second visitor that Saturday doing something behind a tree and went to investigate it after they left. Shot the tree that it was next to, shot the logbook with their paint guns. The Strawberry Creek area just really lent itself to geocaching. They got good trails there. I met a gentleman down there that was walking a dog one time. He lives in a subdivision on the other side of the park, and he was telling me that he cuts the grass down there by hand on top of that. When I say he cuts the grass on the trails. He keeps the trails groomed. I told him what I was doing, and he thought, oh, man, this is great, you know. He goes, I'd like to see more visitors to this park, too, because it's, like I said, an underutilized park. Since that time, I've put in several more in the Strawberry Creek area. Decided to change my name to BBD1, and that's a result of watching a commercial on TV years ago that my daughter really liked about a guy driving a car with his little daughter in there, and he's a real macho guy, and she tells her dad, she says, you're my big bad dad. Well, my daughter saw that commercial, too, and she really loved it. She always introduces me as my big bad dad, so I thought, well, I've got to be BBD1.
Wife cache, too? Does she have a caching name?
Hers is Reading Teacher 27.
I wonder what she does.
She's a reading teacher down in Festus R6 School District teaching second graders how to read. She's been doing that for 31 years now. She's talking about retiring at the end of the year, and Missouri school teachers have one of the best pensions around. She'll go out geocaching with me, but she likes the easy ones, you know, like at a nice park or something, she'll go with me. If I tell her, hey, I got to climb that hill right there, she'll go, I'll meet you back here at the truck. Some of the guys in the Slaga like to up the difficulty rating as they put out caches, but I like to make mine kid-friendly, meaning I'll put kids stuff in the cache. I'll keep it well stocked. I make it easy to get to, nothing hard terrain. All my caches are rated at difficulty 2 or less. The only two that out there that will give anybody any heartburn in the Strawberry Creek area, one was called Bird Trap, and a simple look in the internet will give you the 3-digit number that you need to unlock the lock on the cache. And it's basically the length of the birdhouse down there at the St. Louis Zoo. And the other cache I put out is called St. Louis Trivia. I think it's 12 questions that you got to put a date in each one of these questions. I picked up that first one I told you about. It's called Geocache. It was neglected. I send the guy emails telling him that the logbook was wet and he ought to come out there and refurbish it. And I sent him several emails and never did get a message back from him. So I contacted Glenn. I said, Glenn, I said, I got caches out here. I got to walk right by this one to get to mine, to maintain it. I said, is there any way that I can take over as custodian of this cache? He goes, yeah, I'll transfer it to your name. Glenn knew all about the cache. In fact, I think Glenn said it was one of his first caches, too. He assigned it over to me. A couple of weeks later, I get an email from this guy, Walt. He goes, yeah, I don't live in that area anymore. I appreciate you taking over my cache. Thank you very much, for doing so. Pulled the whole thing out, took it home, got another container of similar size, and stuffed it with stuff from the dollar store, put a new logbook in there, marked it appropriately, put it right back where it was at. It's still there, and it's, like I said, one of the oldest caches in the St. Louis area right now. I've been caching recently with a guy by the name of Larry. He goes by IBEW, retired International Brotherhood Electrical Workers, and he lives down there in Hillsboro, and he's like my mentor right now, and he makes sure I find the cash. He's got over 700 now to his name, and I really appreciate it, Larry, if you're listening to this. He's a watches the internet every night to see what's published and gets up at the crack of dawn and goes out and tries to find them.
Yes, these retired guys.
Yeah.
They got one up on all of us.
Another cache out there is called Ready, Aim, Fire, Top Gun Shooting Range, and they allowed me to put one on the premises there. And I got that particular cache idea from a guy down in Branson when I went and did Cache Houdini. You know, I like this cache. This is really built interesting. And I wonder if my buddy Joe will let me put one next to his business. And I talked to him about it, and he was all for it. And I built it, and I showed it to him. This is where I think I ought to put it right here. And he goes, do it. This particular one, yeah, it took pieces of plumbing. Easy. Kids will like it. If you've ever been fishing down in the Branson area, it seems like 90% of the caches down there are under a rock ledge. You know, you just look for a rock ledge and you'll find a cache. You know, around here, you bury them under, you know, sticks and bark and things like that. We go down to Big Cedar Lodge on Table Rock Lake quite frequently. Last fall, I was telling the guys at the marina down there that I was doing some geocaching, and they didn't know what it was. So I explained it to them, and I said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I said, I'm going to show you how to geocache. And I took a coffee packet, and I hid it under a rock ledge. I said, you just follow this little red arrow. You're looking for something that's man-made. So the first guy, he goes out there, and he finds it without any problem. He goes, oh, that was kind of fun. Casey, I said, now you try to go find this. So he goes out there, and he looks. After a couple minutes, he finds it. And he goes, oh, that was fun. He goes, I hunt a lot. Can I make a point in the woods and just, you know, go back and forth there all the time? And I said, yeah, with a GPS, you can go right there every time. And he goes, oh, I love this. This is fun. I'm going to have to get one for my hunting adventures. And, you know, one of these days, you guys ought to put a geocache out here in Big Cedar Lodge. It's a big area.
It's a private area, but...
yeah, it's 1,000 acres, I guess. So another guy was down there at the marina the next day. He works with the activities chairman down there. I did the same thing with him. I took that coffee packet and I put it up underneath that rock ledge and told Matt, I said, go find this. And he goes down there and he looks around and he finds it. He goes, well, send me some information on it. He approached his activities director there at Big Cedar Lodge, and they're interested in putting some down there now. They're 250 miles away, so I contacted a guy down there, Geo Ferret, and he's pretty much the expert of the Branson area. He got back to me and said, yeah, that's great. You know, I'll be the custodian. You know, you talk to him about putting it in there, and I'll make sure that they stay well-maintained. Yeah, I don't know if you read that article. Just came out not too long ago about... Arkansas Department of Tourism is starting to promote geocaching in their state, in their state parks.
I talked to Alan at Mark Twain Lake area because he's there supporting the caches for MOGA, all 60.
Now, I don't know how he's going to do that. I mean, between you and me, I mean, that might last for a few months, and then they're going to say, hey, we got to clean half of these out or most of these out or leave five around. Or
I had asked him, too, did he ever think that in the near future that they were going to have their own GPSs and rent them out to people who would show up? And he said, no, I don't think so. I don't think there's enough support for that.
Yeah, I agree.
The good thing is it's not just for this event. It's going to be over the long term. So I think it'll it's an experiment, really, to see what that effect has on bringing cashers in, and will it help the economy, buying gas and sandwiches and maybe staying at the motel or something.
Well, I think it's a great idea, and I'm really happy that the Corps of Engineers is jumping in and seeing that there is caching opportunities and is allowing this to happen. I mean, to me, it's a major breakthrough, especially in that area of the woods, which is very conservative up there. A couple of my caches down at Strawberry Creek blend in very nicely because, I'll tell you up front, they're birdhouses. Okay, one's called Bird Trap. That's the one you need the three-digit number to get into. And the other one is Owl's Bend. That one requires no GPS to get to. A birdhouse. And it fits into the environment very nicely. I would probably say that Rich's safe cracker cache up at Emmenegger was probably the most interesting cache I've been to. And like I said, Larry, IBEW retired. He went along with me to find that cache, and I'm glad he did. Finding the cache was easy. Was the easy part. And Larry had been there, and Larry had opened it up before, and I figured it out how to open it up. It was almost a two-man operation. That was probably the most unique cache that I've ever done, along with whatever floats your boat, another Rich cache. That one was just recently archived or something. Hey, have you done that one?
Yeah.
So you know the procedure and how to get it out. Do need the glass of water to get the cache out. I have to be honest with you. I hate micros. They blow my mind. Used correctly, they're okay. All my caches are kid-friendly. I wanted to make sure that nobody was going to climb Mount Everest to get to one. That they'd be an easy find. You know, I wouldn't get a call that says, hey, you know, where's your cache? I want everybody to find them, and I want everybody to have a good time finding them.
Have you been group caching?
I did the bicycle tour down at Tour de Grant last summer, and that was really fun. It seems like every 600 feet there was a cache. I think we started off with like 22, 25 people, and we did half the ride. Some people left, and then we did the other half. Some of them were very interesting finds, but when you got 25 people looking for a cache, you usually find them pretty quick.
The first person who finds it finds it for everybody.
That's right. By the way, Bernie, I know Bernie and I go way back. Bernie used to ride off-road motorcycles with me with the McDonnell Douglas Motorcycle Club. He's a retired McDonnell Douglas or Boeing guy, and he came up to me one of these Friday lunches, and he says, you know, I know you. Do you work at Boeing or McDonnell Douglas? I said, yeah. I said, you look awful familiar, too. He goes, well, I'm Bernie. I go, ah, that's right, Bernie. And he goes, you're Bob Pratt. I go, yeah, that's me. I hadn't seen Bernie at that point for 15 years. Since then, he had retired from McDonnell Douglas or Boeing. And like me, he found out that the dirt bikes are pretty hard on the old guys. Took up other hobbies such as fishing or geocaching. And like I said, I've been going to these with IBEW. And then after lunch, we'd go out and hit some caches till dark. One time we went out and it was dark, but we were in this park and we were bound to find it. Man, we pulled the flashlights out and we looked all over this particular metal structure where it was at. It was a cannon. We never did find it. And Blue Daisy had put it out. We logged our no finds in, and she went out there and she goes, well, it's gone. No wonder you didn't find it. One of the most important things for geocachers to do is to log in a no find if they didn't find it. Kind of gives a heads up to the owner that, well, maybe there is a problem. Maybe even if you didn't find it, log it in. I know some people get embarrassed. I didn't find your cache. You know, it was probably me. And then the next guy, he gets in there. I didn't find your cache. It was probably me. And then after two or three of those, it's, you know, maybe it's not them. Maybe the cache is just gone. To be honest with you, at first I was, you know, exchanging trinkets. And, you know, I would take stuff out and you put stuff in the cache. I don't know about you. I finally came to the point that I don't need to do that. I just want to log the logbook.
You have an excellent website. You know, what you do is just fantastic.
I got interested in geocaching, and it consumed up a lot of my time. When I wasn't working, I spent days doing it. I got burnt out a little bit. I thought, well, how else can I contribute? It turns out that it's a good way to learn how to program the website.
So what were you doing? Also, what was your job?
I am basically a computer programmer, uh-huh. A database programmer.
Jesus, you know, there's a lot of demand for them out there.
You know, the funny thing is, just today, I got a call from somebody who said, I can get you working on Monday, no job interview, but it's in St. Charles, and it's like a more than an hour drive each way for me. Hey, I don't know how you do it.
I go from Imperial to St. Charles every day. It's 37 miles one way. It takes me. If I leave at 6:15 in the morning, I can be at work at 7. 45 minutes.
Well, that's not too bad.
If I leave later than 6:15, the traffic starts to pile up. And I talked to my boss out there at Boeing. I said, you know, I sound driving a long way. What do you think about this? So I'd work 4 9-hour days, and then Friday I'd go in and I'd work 7 to 11. And I did that for a couple years. I told the boss, I said, you know, what do you think? Would you mind if I set up a home office and work virtual on Fridays? think you can do that? I go, yeah, I can. I said, I can take enough work home with me on Thursday night. He says, okay, let's give it a try. So that's been working out real good for the last, little over 2 years now. A buddy of mine, I got him involved in geocaching. I sold him my Magellan. He was by Kirkwood Park. And I said, hey, I said, come over to Kirkwood Park. I'm going to sell you my Magellan and we're going to do some caches. He goes, okay. So I had already programmed the coordinates of several caches over there. And he came on out. We met him after work. Here's your new Magellan. So we go out geocaching that day over Kirkwood Park, and I think we found three of them. And he goes, oh, man, this is fun. So he's been doing some geocaching. He's a big bicycle rider. So now anytime he goes down there and he rides the Grant's Trail, he says, I always take two geocache pages with me, and I try to find them.
Is there much difference between Mark Twain Lake and Lake of the Ozarks?
Mark Twain is that's on the Salt River. It's about 18,000 square acres, where Lake of the Ozarks is like 50,000 square acres. As far as shoreline structure is concerned, of course, Mark Twain is very primitive. You know, there's nothing built on the lake because the Corps of Engineers owns up to a specific elevation, Lake of the Ozarks. It was all Union Electric property. Union Electric sold the logging rights to help pay for the dam there. So they cleared out all the structure. And then when they did all that, then they started filling up the lake, and then the Union Electric turned around and sold all the shoreline property. So the Corps of Engineers has no presence there at all, with the exception of the Missouri State Water Patrol, which patrols the water. Lake of the Ozarks is basically all private property with the exception of the park areas.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to let us in on your life and giving us your words of wisdom.
To me, it's a great kid sport, too. I guess we're big kids, aren't we? Keep the caches coming, folks.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.